A gentle introduction to South Indian classical Carnatic music, part 1 of 4 by Ramesh Mahadevan. Acknowledgements. I owe a tremendous amount of gratitude to my music teachers, Professor T. R. Subramaniam and Professor Prabhakara Verma, and to friends like Surya Prabha, Srikant Chari, and Professor R. Pichamani, University of Connecticut, for teaching me the fundamentals. A big thanks to Ilayaraja, no, I don't know him personally, for many wonderful Carnatic music-based film songs, which presented an entirely different angle to Carnatic music. Finally, I owe it all to my friend K.S. Balaji for introducing me to Carnatic music. I am also fortunate to be with friends with several folks who are very knowledgeable about music. I learnt a lot from them, and many of them have been active on the music boards, B-boards, one time or the other. A short list of these people are Professor S. Mahadevan and Monica, Vanderbilt University, Professor Venkata Subramaniam and Vyuju, Purdue, Mukund Srinivasan, Chandramouli, AT&T, Professor V. Krishnan, University of Texas, Srinivasan Gopalaswamy, Carnegie Mellon, Srinivasan Pichamani, and Kannikeshwaran. And it's always a pleasure to acknowledge how much I benefited from Rajan Parirkar and his immense knowledge of almost every aspect of Indian music. Read by Shiv Kumar Kalyan Raman. What is the focus of this primer? Many of us have grown up in India where we were exposed to Indian classical music in one form or another. However, if you are not from a musically inclined family, the odds that you perceived classical music to be something esoteric that only a selected few could understand and appreciate. An occasional devotional song or a classically tuned film song would have made you stop and take note. Your curiosity could have been aroused, but you may have quickly ignored the instinct and made a beeline for the usual pursuits in life. Even if you were interested enough to find out about classical music, you did not know what books to read or whom to talk to. Even if you managed to talk to someone, it is likely that the person made you feel inadequate about your lack of musical abilities or proceeded to give you a long lecture about music with a million buzzwords that confused you and weaned you off your curiosity. It is unfortunate that there is a total lack of simple, readable introductory texts on Indian classical music, especially when compared to volumes and volumes of elementary books available on Western classical music. No wonder an average college-educated person in the United States is at least mildly knowledgeable about Western classical music, whereas an average Indian, by and large, ignorant about the technicalities of Indian classical music. This primer is a feeble attempt to introduce Carnatic music in a gentle way, in a language we presumably all can understand. I want to be able to rekindle your interest and help you discover some of the quote method unquote and grammar of Carnatic music. Even though these notes are aimed at introducing Carnatic music, a lot of what I have to say will also apply to Hindustani classical music. This primer is obviously not meant for experts. I have intentionally kept this text simple. The idea is to introduce the richness of Carnatic music and not to write an encyclopedia. Some of what I will be saying may not be entirely accurate, but the simplicity is more important than the dictionary definition of terms. This primer is only intended to get you started, and once you are on your own, there are many, many texts you can refer to for all kinds of information. These notes are also not meant to be complete, because I will be using only a minimum of technical terms. I won't even attempt to discuss the vadi, vivadi, samvadi kind of technicalities and lose my readers. So, let's get started. Sound and music. Music is an extremely subjective oral experience. Some sounds are perceived by us as pleasant and some as unpleasant. What is considered pleasant or unpleasant can be quite personal, based upon our specific culture, exposure to particular kinds of music, and perhaps even what our parents told us. A song could be a major hit in one country and could be completely disliked and ignored in some other country. Our musical tastes are indeed developed. As we grow up and discover music from other cultures or newer musical styles, our tastes too change. Sometimes we even discover a pleasant piece of music purely by accident, because it simply happened to resonate with our inner sensibilities. Oh, nothing like self-discovery. So how do we make sense of sound and music? Let us try to answer this by examining some simple concepts first. Our high school physics tells us that sound has several features such as pitch, intensity, quality, and duration. The pitch is just the frequency of the sound vibration given in hertz or cycles. The musical term for frequency is tone. The audible frequency range extends from 25 hertz to around 8 or 10,000 hertz, although it depends entirely on the individual. Children can hear much higher frequencies. At the low end of the range, even if we may not hear ultra-low frequencies, we may feel the vibration as a tactile sensation. The intensity is the same as loudness, and it is related to the amplitude of the sound wave. One should learn not to confuse the intensity with the frequency. For example, try to recite the nursery rhyme, "Ba ba black sheep, have you any wool?" Okay, we will first stop now and actually recite it.
There's an illustration of the Ba ba black sheep and how it is discrete.
When you come to the syllable black in the phrase black sheep, you are hitting a higher tone compared to baba. Dun, 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 baba black sheep. It goes, this is the effect of frequency. You can feel it going higher. Now you can either whisper this nursery rhyme or shout your guts out. In either case, you are simply changing the what we call the intensity. The other attribute of sound, duration, is self-explanatory. How long you hold a note. It is simply the time during which the specific frequency or tone lasts. The term quality is more difficult to understand. It is simply a signature of the source of sound. It is a term which explains why a violin sounds like a violin and a drum sounds like a drum. The two sounds are different, and that is called quality. This attribute is precisely the reason you can make out your mother's voice over the phone, even if she has a horrible cold. The bottom line is, when you or an instrument produce sound, you not only produce one frequency, but also produce a spectrum consisting of several overtones. This is variously referred to as timbre or tone color. This constitutes the quality of that sound. Just to explain this concept some more, let's say you try to produce a single frequency with your voice. One way to produce a single frequency is to get a keyboard and keep pressing one of its keys and you hum along till you resonate. If you actually analyze the waveform you produced, you will see not only a significant amount of the frequency you are trying to produce, but also small amounts of other frequencies, which are the overtones. The exact composition of overtones you produced is in some sense the signature of your voice and constitutes its quality. This should also set you thinking. Just how in the world do you perceive sounds? How do you identify your friend's voice? Clearly you're not decomposing it into frequency components like what the electrical engineers call Fourier analysis. How do you sometimes make out which song it is simply by listening to a few notes? How is it that you can mentally visualize someone's voice, laughter, sounds, some past conversations, songs, etc.? Basically, when you hear sounds and music, you're simply doing a pattern recognition against what you already know. Over the years, your brain has stored a certain number of primitives. This list is a dynamic one, and primitives are added or lost as you grow older, and you have an intrinsic capability to match a freshly heard sound impulse to the basic database. If you hear a strange sound that does not produce a match, sometimes you load it up as a primitive. An equally interesting exercise is this. Think of 5 songs you really like. Can you explain why you like them, or what is in common with all of them? Can you explain and define your musical taste? Unfortunately, however, much analysis one does in terms of frequencies and so forth, it finally boils down to psychological factors when it comes to music and taste. Analysis is merely a tool to understand some of its structure. It can never explain why some musical sounds are deemed romantic or some are deemed harsh, or why some ragam is an evening ragam, if you believe in such things. Such mystique about music will come back to haunt us and will forever prevent us from understanding its totality in an objective manner. This is a simple stab at the psychology of sound perception. Let's get back to the business at hand. Western music, Indian music, and the keyboard. Let us examine the frequency aspect of music first. This is perhaps the most studied aspect as well. We mentioned that all music is produced in the audible frequency range, a range which varies from person to person. Although human ears cannot tell very high tones, musical instruments can produce frequencies, overtones, even beyond the threshold of human hearing. Music is sometimes described technically as, quote, tonal or chromatic. Both terms simply mean that we use a whole spectrum of frequencies to produce music. The audible range is divided into octaves. An octave is really a frequency range from a frequency F1 to F2, such that F2, the second frequency, is twice that of F1 in terms of cycles or hertz, the unit of measurement. For some physiological reason, the human ear is logarithmic and is sensitive to frequency octaves. The audible frequency is then comprised of many, many octaves. We can choose any number to be our F1, and of course F2 is twice or 2 times F1. We can define an octave from 10 Hz to 20 Hz, or equally define, well, one from 15 Hz to 30 Hz. Let's get a sense of what an octave is. This playing of an octave is done by Harihar.
This is an illustration of the notes in the keyboard, starting with middle C. This is a middle C. The next note is a black note to the right of C. It's called C sharp in the Western notation system. And Re, or Sadharana Rishabham, in the Carnatic music. The next one is a white key. It's called D. The next key is D sharp. Next one is E. Next key is F. One thing to note that note here is that there is no difference between E and F. I said no difference between.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
This piece will illustrate the middle C octave in the Western music scale, and will also compare it with the Dvadash Swarasthanas, or the 12 Swarasthanas, or the places of the 12 notes in the Carnatic music scale. And we will also illustrate the Shodasa, or 16 Swarasthanas, where there are 4 extra notes which are just varieties of existing notes, which are just given a different name. So the thing which is going on in the background is the Sa Pa Sa in the C, or middle C scale. Now we will start with Harihar illustrating the middle C scale and giving the note and its description as in the Western music, followed by the same thing in the Carnatic music. The first note is C, middle C. The next one is a black note to the right of C, and it's called C sharp, or alternately it can be called D flat. The next note is D. The next note to the right of D can be called D sharp or E flat. Then comes E. The next note is F. To the right of F comes F sharp or G flat. Next comes G. G sharp. A. A sharp or B flat. B. And C. So when we reach the higher C, we have come to the end of an octave. And the frequency of the higher C is double the frequency of the lower C we played initially. So, sa, sa.
So that was an illustration of the ideas of an octave, and especially with the illustration of the C scale or the middle C scale. So as we went from the lower sa, which was the frequency F1, to the higher sa, the frequency F2, there was a doubling of the frequency. In terms of sound production, a typical human voice can produce several frequencies, although it is usually limited to about 3 or 4 octaves. Even if you have a drum-like, groggy morning voice at the low end of the range and a shrill, ear-piercing shriek at the high end. Only the exceptionally gifted people can produce a wide range of vocal sounds spanning several octaves. Of course, there are those female Indian movie playback singers who can produce ultra-high frequencies which only dogs can hear clearly. By the way, we are only talking about primary frequencies and not overtones associated with the quality of our voices. Remember that overtones are higher frequency components but produced in much lower intensities. A piano or a keyboard is a typical Western musical instrument. All we see is a bunch of keys, some in black and some in white. However, upon a closer look, we see that there is a periodicity. As we go from the left of the keyboard to the right, and here I'm assuming you know how to sit in front of the keyboard, the keys produce higher and higher frequencies. In fact, the key frequencies are arranged in such a manner that they are in a geometric series. That is, the frequency between any key and the key immediately to the left, irrespective of the color of the key, is a constant. The constant being equal to the 12th root or 2 or 1.059. For example, typically there's a white key in the keyboard set to 240 Hz, and then the adjacent key to the right, black one as a matter of fact, is set to 240 multiplied by 1.059 or 254 Hz. By the specific choice of this ratio, 12th root of 2, we find that by the time we have reached the 13th key, we have doubled our frequency and thus spanned a whole octave. In fact, if you look at the keyboard, you see that the key pattern repeats every 12 keys. If you choose the white key at 240 Hz and the 13th key to be 480 Hz, and your octave range from 240 to 480 Hz, equally well you could have started counting from the black key at 254 Hz, and 12 keys later you would have hit a note that spanned an octave, except that this time your octave range from 254 to 508 Hz. This division of the octave into 12 tones, which have a specific ratio between the adjacent keys, the ratio equaling 1.059, is peculiar to Western music. This geometric arrangement of frequencies of the keys in an octave is called an equally tempered arrangement. And besides the keyboard, most Western musical instruments are also tuned to such an arrangement. Even though there is a degree of freedom about what you want to be at the range of the octave, whether it's from 240 to 480 or 254 to 508, the Western music defines a standard octave called the middle octave, and also called the middle C octave. It's also called the middle key scale, and this was what we heard Harihar playing a few minutes ago. That starts from the white key set to 240 Hz. The entire octave, the 12 key pattern that is shown in the figure, which you can read in the textual portion if you'd like. On the keyboard, this octave is located somewhere near the middle. Once you have figured where this octave is, you can quickly identify the first key of this octave set to 240 Hz, and because we know the ratio of the key frequencies, now we can pretty much compute the frequency of generated by any key because it's related to the first key. You will also notice that the keyboard has about 3 to 4 octaves between 36 to 48 keys, depending upon how much you paid for it. The upper octave starting from 480 Hz is the upper C octave, and the lower octave starting at 120 Hz is the lower C octave. From table 1 given below, which you can see in the text, which you can download from the webpage, we notice that the keys in the octave have labels for identification. Of the white keys, and there are 7 of them in an octave, the first one is called C, hence the term middle C octave, and then we progress alphabetically to G and get back to A and B, in which the present octave ends and the C key of the next octave begins. The same labeling system is repeated for the keys in the other octave as well. If you notice, the 5 black keys have ambiguous labels because each one of them has 2 labels. The first black key, for example, is called C sharp or D flat. It is obvious that sharpening essentially is a technical term for being one key higher, and similarly flattening is one key lower in frequency and the white key in the prefix. The labels, frequencies of all the 12 keys in the middle C octaves are provided in a table. Now let's continue listening to the musical illustration where we'll also compare this to how it sounds in the Carnatic music scale.
Okay, now we will see the same notes as labeled as swaras, or the Indian way of doing things. So this was C, we call it sa. So this is the next note, which is called the sadharana rishabham. Shuddha rishabham. It's called re sa. Next note, sa re. So this is the chatushruti rishabham. Now this note is called the sadharana gandharam, sa ga. The next note, ga. Gandharam. Next note, ma. It's called the Shuddha Madhyamam. This is called the Prati Madhyamam. Ma. Pa. This is the fifth or the Panchamam. Sa. Pa. Shuddha Devatam. Sada Pada. Okay. This is the Chatushruti Devatam. Ni. This is the Kaisiki Nishadam. Pani. Next note. Ni. Called the Kakali Nishadam. Sa, which is the end of the octave. So what we have seen is the two varieties for the Devatam, Nishadam, Rishabham and Gandharam and Madhyamam, and one variety for the Sa and Pa, for a total of 12 notes. That is called the Dvadasha, or 12 note scheme. Now we will look at the Shodasha scheme. The only difference in this is that a few notes like Rishabham, Gandharam, Devatam, Nishadam have alternate labeling. Okay, so we'll look at, start from Sa, Sa, and go to Chatushruti Rishabham. Sa, Re. No, next one. Re. Now this Chatushruti Rishabham can also be labeled as Gandharam. Sa, Ga. Actually, the way it is sung is sa ri ga, ga ma za ri ga ma ga ri za ma ga ri za. Okay, so you see that even though it is the Chatushruti Rishabham, it's called a different Gandharam. It's called a Shuddha Gandharam in that case. Ga. Okay, now what we do is the Sadharana Gandharam, can also be called as Rishabham. So this is called Shat Shruti Rishabham. Shat Shruti Rishabham. Sa ga. Instead of calling that ga, we call it re. Sa re. Okay, so this occurs in Ragams like Nate, where we do sa re ga. Okay, so that was Shat Shruti Rishabham. We go on to Daivatam. First we'll do Pa. Zum Pa Dha Pa Dha. And we call that Ni. Pa Ni Pa Dha Ni. So usually it's sung like that. So Pa Dha Ni Sa. Okay, so sa ni da ba ba da ni sa ni da ba. Okay, so it has a sort of weird or vivadi feeling about it, so that's why it's called a vivadi swaram. Okay, similarly in the Kaisika Nishadam, ni can also be sung as dha. Pa da ni sa sa ri ga ma pa da. So that comes in Nate. Okay, so these two extra varieties for Daivatam Nishadam and for Rishabham Gandharam add four more notes, and these artificial notes or aliased notes together with the 12 notes are called the Shodasa Swarasthana scheme. That's the end of this module.
So we get back to the main discussion. So what we saw right now was an illustration of the arrangement of keys in a keyboard, which within an octave, the 12 notes, which in the Carnatic music are called Dwadasha Swarasthana scheme, or Swara means note, Sthana means position. And then essentially we aliased for two notes, the Rishabham Gandharam, the Daivatam Nishadam, two other notes, and therefore we had a Shodasa or 16 note scheme, which was just a division of the octave into notes. Okay, and the reason that is important is because most ragams are specified in terms of these notes, and ragam is a combination of one Rishabham, one Gandharam, and so on and so forth. And that makes the ragam, and then when the ragam shape or scheme comes out, you add gamakams and other things to it. Okay, we'll look at this a little more later. Coming back to the text, so here is a bizarre set of technical terms. By definition, each key is supposed to be a semitone or half tone apart from the adjacent key. Thus, keys which are second nearest neighbors are considered a whole tone apart. Note that the sense in which we use the word tone here is quite different from our earlier usage of it to mean frequency. So tone here, or semitone, refers to a difference between the keys, or the difference in frequencies between the keys. For example, the white key, C key, and the first black key, C sharp, are a semitone apart. And this is what was illustrated. Sa re, that is a semitone difference, and sa re, that is a tone difference. That is the difference between C and D, type whole tone difference. Yet another aside, all keyboards are not necessarily tuned to the middle C key, which is set at 240 Hz. You can build keyboards which have a difference reference point, fixing the middle A to a particular frequency like 440 Hz is a common alternative. So you can play with the keys and produce music. The keys and the tones they produce are the basic building blocks of music. Whether it's Carnatic or whether it's harmony-based Western music or whether it's Hindustani. You can even press the same key twice or stay in a key for an extended period of time. You'll also notice that although some melodies are pleasant to the senses, some other sequences are not. A melody is a sequence of notes. If it is the very first time you're tinkering with a keyboard, the odds are that whatever melody you produce, the sounds musical to you are of course extremely unpleasant to the others around you. If you increase the volume on the electric keyboard, you are changing the intensity. If you choose different instruments the modern keyboards simulate, you are then changing the quality. Basically, you know now how to manipulate the essentials of music, namely the pitch, intensity, duration and quality, just by playing with a keyboard. Having said all this, we should also realize that there is nothing inherently scientific or sacred about the equally tempered 12 key per octave Western music system, where an arbitrarily set point is created at 240 Hz. There are also other alternative systems and creative musicians who are always experimenting with unconventional systems. In music, it is cool to break tradition. For example, there is no need to have 12 keys in an octave. In fact, the traditional Indian music system over thousands of years is based upon a 22 key per octave scheme. Even if you choose 12 keys to fill in an octave, there is no reason to tune them in a geometric progression. In other words, you don't have to have an equally tempered scale. You can locate your frequencies based upon some other non-geometric criteria, which might sound even better. Such scales in fact exist and are called just tempered scales. In fact, the Indian musical system uses one such scale. And in the final analysis, there is no need to even stick to the concept of octaves when producing music. In short, to produce music, there is no need for a grammar and rules. If it sounds pleasant, you're on. However, let's first learn the established grammar and tradition before we attempt to break them. Even though Indian musical systems are very different from the traditional Western music system, we can still get a lot of insight into Indian music using the equally tempered 12 keys per octave methodology, essentially because it makes things simple. Also, the keyboard is probably one of the easiest instruments to play. This has always been a bone of contention between traditional Indian musicologists and the quick and dirty folks like us. The Indian musicologists, traditionalists, will argue that we are compromising by limiting ourselves to just 12 tones per octave, when tradition dating thousands of years back categorically spells out 22 tones per octave. The 22 shrutis, or notes or tones, for the middle C octave is given in another table, table 3 in the text. By the way, the Indian word for frequency or pitch or tone is called shruti. A word of caution though, the term shruti has other several interpretations and meanings. Like, for example, you hear the background set of notes, which sets a background for singers. That is also called a shruti, and it's played in a instrument called the tambura, actually simulated on a CD here. We will come across several of these usages later of the term shruti. Why some Indian schools of thought even propose that there are infinite frequencies in an octave? The basic reasons for such demands for more than 12 shrutis per octave, that is discrete octave splitting, is that Indian music, not just Carnatic music, seems to flow through the frequencies, whereas a Western song seems to be jumpy, that is discrete. So we just heard the example Baba Black Sheep earlier, and let's now compare it to an Indian song. This is actually a film song, a movie song, Roop Tera Mastana. And you'll see that the Indian song seems to involve a lot of vocal acrobatics and nuances that not just go through piano-like jumps or discrete jumps, but goes through continuous set of notes. And this main difference we call a gamaka is the main difference between Indian and Western music scales. And we'll return to this point again in this primer. So let's listen to the song Roop Tera Mastana to get an idea of what I'm talking about.
रूप तेरा मस्ताना प्यार मेरा दीवाना रूप तेरा मस्ताना प्यार मेरा दीवाना भूल कोई हमसे ना हो जाए रूप तेरा मस्ताना प्यार मेरा दीवाना भूल कोई हमसे ना हो जाए Thank you. रात नशीली मस्त समा है, आज नशे में सारा जहां है। रात नशीली मस्त समा है, आज नशे में सारा जहां है। आए शराबी मौसम बहलाए, रूप तेरा मस्ताना, प्यार मेरा दीवाना, भूल कोई हमसे ना हो जाए। बेचैन होके तूफान जैसे, आंखों से आंखें मिलती है ऐसे, बेचैन होके तूफान जैसे। मौज कोई साहिल से टकराए, प्यार मेरा दीवाना, भूल कोई हम देना हो जाए। हमको जमाना दूर ही रहना, पास न आना रोक रहा है। हमको जमाना दूर ही रहना, पास न आना। ऐसे मगर कोई दिल को समझाए, रूप तेरा मेरा।
So that was the song Roop Tera Mastana. So the reason why we bring that into the discussion of classical music is that the ideas are quite similar to understand Gamakas and several other aspects of Indian music. So you saw that there was a lot of mix of harmony and melody and lots of instruments which came in the song. But in a typical classical music concert of India, you would have just a few instruments and a main instrument or a vocalist who would be involved. So as compared to a much more elaborate orchestra in an Indian light music song. So we saw that the point we raised was in Indian melodies are more complex because you can go through a lot of nuances. So the tone actually, you just don't pick discrete tones in the octave but go through continuous tones. This is why Indian classical music cannot be played effectively on a 12 key per octave instrument like piano, because you will miss all those gamakas or nuances in between. Of course, several Western instruments have been adapted with a little modification here and there to play Indian classical music, like the violin, mandolin and guitar, for example. Some instruments have been simply used without modification, such as harmonium and its latest cousin, the keyboard. Indian music purists abhor such blatant use of Western equal-tempered instruments. Expert harmonium player Rajan Parirkar points out that just tempered harmoniums with 22 tones per octave, even over 50 tones per octave, have been built by various people. Now let's come back to this basic difference between the Western and the Indian music classical music system. We noted that in Indian music it is not enough to produce just 12 or even 22 tones in an octave. One ought to produce even the intermediate frequencies. These intermediate frequencies, which do not have any keys to produce them, are called microtones. The Indian word for the microtone is called gamakam or gamak in Hindi. It is often very difficult to explain this concept clearly and precisely. If the C key produces 240 hertz and the C sharp key produces 254 hertz. What are the intermediate frequencies we are talking about? Does Indian music use sounds produced at 247 hertz? Treatises have been written in India about such microtonal aspects of music. Suffice it to say that microtones or gamakams tend to be clustered around primary key frequency, even though this need not be the case. Let me give you an example of a gamaka. So the notes sa is sung as sa, and re is the tone rishabham. Ga ga sa re ga. So this combination comes in several songs. So we look at the gamakam for the note re. Sa re sa sa ga re ga re. So we sang that, but we sang it as re, and we call that as a gamakam for re. But the gamakam for re is essentially the approximation sa ga re ga re, and we sang it as the note re. Sa re, and it's not just sa ga re ga re, that is just the approximation, because we sang the intermediate notes or the microtones as we sang the note beyond, over and above just sa ga re ga re. Okay. So we'll see more of these examples as we go later. Now that if you postulate that Indian music octave has 22 or 200 keys or infinity per octave, then what used to be a microtone in a 12 key system could now very well be a key itself. Of course, you can make a piano with such a large number of tones per octave. It may be a long piano and you need a superhuman dexterity to play it. But the positive side of it is that you will be able to play Indian music on it. The bottom line is that piano produces just 12 frequencies on one octave, and that is not enough to compose, and that is enough to compose a lot of Western songs, whereas to make Indian music, 12 keys are not enough in an octave. You also need gamakams. Let's talk some more about the gamakams or microtones. The vocal gliding and rolling in Indian music, remember Kishore Kumar's yodeling and several of the examples we saw in the light music song Roop Tera Mastana. Whether it sounds good or not, these are examples of microtone usage. And I gave you an example of sa ga ri ga ri. So there are gamakas. Let me give you an example of a usage in a varnam. A famous varnam is called Ninnu Kori. Ninnu ko ga gha ri ri. Even though it is a melody, that is a sequence of notes, the microtones add a lot of variety and color to the music. Okay, and as we saw, it is the intermediate notes between two notes, and also the word re, re. Even though we say re, we are actually singing ga re ga re ga re, and we are sliding through the notes from ga to re in the particular order. Okay. So there are different gamaka rules for different ragams, which form the basis or more expanded building blocks for that ragam. And if you look at any class for Geetam or Varnam, which is available on the webpage, you will see these illustrated in more greater detail. So in fact, the microtones add variety to Indian classical music, an extra dimension which adds color to this music and makes it much more attractive. From movie songs to folk music to classical music, the very heart of Indian music is this continuous flow or gliding to the continuum of frequencies or gamakam or microtonal excursions that add color, and it's the heart. Thus, it's often said that Indian music is melody based, but it should be emphasized that it's microtonal melody based. Since microtones are so important to Carnatic and Hindustani music, and very few instruments can produce all the frequencies in an octave, the best enunciation of Indian music is in vocal singing. Many instruments like violin, go-to adhyam called Chitravina these days, and even the simple bamboo flute can produce a lot of gamakams or microtones, of course. Just to drag the concept a little further, some of you who have grown up in India may have developed a taste for Indian music, be it movie songs or highly classical songs. When you were exposed to Western rock and roll music, you may have been drawn towards numbers rich in gamakams. The Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, etc. have produced many such pieces, rather than the rhythm-oriented heavy metal numbers. in the same breath, people say that the Western music is harmony based as opposed to melody based. This brings out yet another difference between the two systems. Harmony is produced when several instruments play different melodies or pieces simultaneously, like in an orchestra. Harmony is also produced when more than one tone is produced at the same time. In the Western music, harmony is an important element. So let's try to understand what this is, because orchestration and harmony are largely absent in the Indian classical music in its basic form, though people have tried out orchestration of Indian classical music time and again with limited success. Of course, it is quite often used in Indian light music forms. So let's take a look at that. That was Harihar playing the harmony for you. So compare how very different that is from a Carnatic music melody like
Mata Piganapatim Bhaje Ham Vata Piganapatim Bhaje Ham Vata Piganapatim Bhaje Ham Vata Piganapatim Bhaje Ham.
So that is the difference between melody, where it's a sequence of notes embellished with gamakas or microtones, versus an orchestration or harmony. When I sang the sequence of melodies, I used the background to set a backdrop of music or the tonal qualities for me, and that one is in the background is called the Shruti. Orchestration and harmony are absent in Indian classical music in the purest form. People have tried out the orchestration of Indian classical music time and again with limited success. Even though you see multiple musicians in a concert, Indian classical concert, like a violinist and a mridangam player, the purpose of the violinist is not to provide harmony support. It is just to provide more melodic support and to reiterate or provide a shadow version of the melodies played by the main singer or sung by the main singer. There have also been probably as many Western attempts to compose and play Indian-style melody-based classical music. There is not such a market of fusion music, except perhaps among fringe elements of the immigrant Indian community. Even if there's a jugalbandi, a standard fare in Hindustani classical music, where two instruments or even vocalists are featured together, the musicians usually follow the same melodic pattern one after the other with minor variation, rather than play different melodies simultaneously. Though the fusion musicians are growing in number, and folks like guitar Prasanna, L. Subramaniam are all examples of people who are specialists in this art. There are a number of other differences as well between the two systems of music. Indian classical music, for example, does not use what are called chords, or pressing more than one key simultaneously. Chords are a major aspect of Western music, and producing harmony via chords is a natural consequence of the equally tempered geometric series arrangements of the keys. So we saw that the usage of chords and the movement among chords in the harmony example we heard from Harihar. If keys were arranged in a just tempered sequence, pressing more than one key at a given time might produce an unpleasant sound pattern, resulting in what is called besur in Hindustani music or apaswaram in Carnatic music. By the way, it is one more advantage of equal temperament of pianos and keyboards is that it makes it easier to tune them. If they go out of tune every once in a while, they need to be tuned periodically, since each key is harmonically related to the other keys. In case of a just-tempered arrangement, since the key ratio between adjacent keys is not a constant, most keys will need to be tuned individually. Also absent is polyphony, where several instruments' melodies come and go asynchronously instead of at periodically predictable times. This is the difference between Indian and Western classical music. Also, the Western scales are standardized. The middle C octave ranges from 240 to 480 Hz. There is no reason to stick to these frequencies. In fact, in Indian music, you have the freedom to choose the frequency range of the octave from anywhere to twice anywhere. You can start at 230 Hz if you wish. Also, in Western classical music, most musicians have music notated on sheets of paper and read it when performing. Indian music is also always played by the ear rather than by reading. So, to give an example, the background Shruti you're hearing is not the C scale, it is a little bit higher, called around the C sharp scales. And that I can view as the beginning or the basis of my octave. Sa ni is a note below it, and I can say since that is probably the 240 Hz location. Just to summarize, the essential differences between Indian classical music system and the Western music system are the Western keyboard is equally tempered and discrete, whereas the Indian keyboard should be just tempered. Only 12 keys per octave are used in the West, whereas the Indian music one needs to produce several intermediate microtones, not represented by a conventional keyboard called gamakas. This is one of the major differences. And C, harmony, chords, polyphony are absent in the Indian classical music system. And in the Indian classical music system, there's no need to standardize an octave to begin at 240 Hz. You can pick any location which is convenient for the voice or the instrument. We have enunciated again and again that we need many microtones or gamakas to produce Indian music. Still in this chapter, we are going to use a conventional Western keyboard to learn about Indian music. It's almost like the Indian music is an analog entity, and we are trying to quantize or digitize it into 12 keys, knowing fully well that we will have something akin to truncation or approximation errors. But before we begin, let us define one more term, the note. The note is a primitive element of a musical phrase. An analogy will be the concept of a syllable in a spoken word or a letter in a written word. For example, the nursery rhyme Ba Ba Black Sheep, there are four notes, namely Ba Ba Black and Sheep. By curious coincidence, the line also has four syllables, and we have managed to make a note for each syllable. The concept of a note is so simple that even if you know nothing about music, you may be able to tell how many notes there are in a simple melodic pattern. On the other hand, consider Roop Tera Mastana Pyar Mera Deewana. When spoken, the word Roop has only one syllable. However, when sung, it is distorted to sung like Roopu and uses two notes. Similarly, when the singer goes Pyar Mera, he glides the end of the word Mera into several notes. The term note and tone are different, and make sure you understand it. So the note is the sahitya or the word which you sang, but the underlying tone is the music that is sung. Make sure you understand it. Okay, we'll just do a little bit of Roop Tera Mastana to re-emphasize this point.
Roop Tera Mastana, Pyar Mera Deewana. रूप तेरा मस्ताना प्यार मेरा दीवाना भूल कोई हमसे ना हो जाए रूप तेरा मस्ताना प्यार मेरा दीवाना भूल कोई हमसे ना हो जाए
सो वी सॉ दैट द वर्ड रूप तेरा वाज sang with different notes underlying it. So that is the difference between what we call swaram, a note, or sur in the Hindustani system, and the tone, which is the sahityam. Now we are ready to get more technical and tinker with any commercially available keyboard to learn about Indian classical music. A diagram showing a keyboard was given in table 2 in the text, except that we have now labeled the keys with the Indian names. Once again, 8 out of the 12 keys have unique labels, and the 4 out of the remaining keys 3, 4, 10, and 11, have ambiguous two possible names. Like the Western notation, the keys with the ambiguous labels are both black and white, two of each. In the Indian system, we do not use alphabets to label keys. Instead, we use short meaningless syllables which go sa ri ga ma pa da ni. Don't beat me to death on this. I know there are etymological reasons for choosing these set of syllables. These seven syllables are actually mnemonics to represent the notes, or what we call swarams in Indian music, and they are referred to as the Sapta Swarams or seven swarams. So confusing as it may sound, and in Indian music we use the notes to represent the tones. Upon looking at table 2, we see that there are some three keys that can be designated as re. Even they are designated as re1, re2 and re3, and they are all called re. Okay, we saw an example of this earlier when we were looking at the notion of an octave, but let me give you an example again. Sa, the seven notes are sa ri ga ma pa da ni sa. It's very similar to do re mi. Now there are several varieties of re, as I said. Sa ri, that's one type of variety. Sa ri, okay, that is another variety. And sa ri, and you see there are usages for this. Ninuko, that tree sa ri. And then meru samana gari, that re is the small re. And so, re sa re ga ma pa ma ga ma re. Swaminada paripalaya sumari. So all of these have a very different feel to it. And similarly, ga has three varieties. The actual two actual note varieties and one aliased variety, as I mentioned earlier. Ga is the antaragandharam. Ga is the sadharanagandharam. Ga is the shatushudrishvam sangas gandharam. Sari, saga, sarigamam. Remember that? We did that. So similarly, there are varieties for madhyamam. Ma ma pa da da pa da pa da ni sa. Those are three varieties for nishadam. Ni ni ni, all these are varieties for nishadam. Okay, these together form the shodasha or 16 note scheme, while the dwadasha is the actual 12 note base. And remember that the difference was that there was some aliased notes or some notes given different names in the shodasha scheme or 16 note scheme. So we saw that there are seven basic notes or swaras, also called the solfege notation, and there are sthanas or positions for these notes. That's why they're called swarasthanas. And dwadasha means the 12 swarasthana scheme, note position scheme, and the shodasha means 16 swarasthana or note position scheme. And songs or ragas have building blocks made out of these swaras. Remember, even in the West, there is a solfege notation which goes as do, re, mi, so, etc. Basically, the solfege notation is a singable set of syllables which helps us describe a musical melody. It'll sound quite ridiculous to sing out words like C, C sharp, E sharp, instead of do, fa, la, when we hit the keyboard keys. And aside, the complete names for the Indian notation are as follows: Shadjam for sa, Rishabham for re, Gandharam for ga, Madhyamam for ma, Panchamam for pa, Daivatam for da, and Nishadam for ni. This information is provided just so that you don't get too zapped when somebody uses these names. Even in the case of Indian music, we can extend our labeling of the keys to other octaves such as the Western system. In the Indian music, the main octave is called Madhyasthayi. The high octave above it is called Tarasthayi. So for example, sa sa ri ga ma pa ma ga ma re. So the singer here is said to be singing in the Tarasthayi or the higher sthayi. And the octave below the Madhyasthayi, Madhyasthayi, remember, was sa ri ga ma pa ma ga ma re. And Mandrasthayi is the octave below it. Sa ni pa
Bani.
That's below the sthayi. It's called mantra, not below. Based on the way the mantras were chanted in the low frequencies in centuries past. In terms of notation, the keys in the higher octave are labeled with a dot on top of the notes. The keys in the mantra sthayi are identified with dots below the solfege notes. This is just a notational convenience. Many good Indian musicians have voices spanning the entire three octaves. Although most Indian compositions use up just the complete madhya sthayi and top half of the mantra sthayi, only half an octave below, and the bottom half of the stara sthayi. You saw that I just sang sari, that is just the top half of the stara sthayi, and sani pa. You see, my voice is unable to go lower, whereas a good Indian musician would have had the capability to go even lower than that in the mantra sthayi and higher than that in the stara sthayi. We also see that the 12 keys of the octave divide into two halves. The four keys which are designated as Riga are called the bottom tetrachord. In the Indian terminology, it's called Purvangam. Sarigama. That part is called the Purvangam. Padanisa is the higher four notes. This is the Ragam Natai. In the upper tetrachord, it's called Uttarangam. There is some kind of symmetry between the bottom and top tetrachords and key label assignments. Just when you thought you had seen enough of these buzzwords, here is one more. The starting pitch of a personalized voice octave relative to a standard octave determines your pitch of your voice. Your signature pitch or shruti, here we are using the word shruti to mean the starting frequency of your octave, is measured in a weird sounding unit called kattai. Half a kattai is a semitone and a full kattai is a whole tone. If your voice happens to start at 240 Hz, you have a 4 kattai shruti by definition. If your voice is very low pitched, you can have lower than the 4 kattai, as in case of many males, and women and children are high pitched and can have higher than 4 or even 6 kattai shrutis, and their octave will start at frequencies higher than 240 Hz. An approximate Western equivalent of this is called register. In Indian classical music, the octaves are free-floating, varying from person to person. The starting points are not pegged at 240 Hz. It is also common to abbreviate the seven notes Sarigama Padanisa into the letters S, R, G, M, P, D, N. This is the kind of notation you will find in my webpage as I notate the songs, and I have used this to teach the classes, which you can find online. If you look for Carnatic music class on Google or something like that. This is in the Carnatic music archive. The way to use this table is to realize that when you hit the first key of the octave, the C, you will sing out Sa. When you hit the first black key, C sharp, you'll sing out Re. Sa, Re, Sa, Re. Okay? And the third key, you will sing out Re or perhaps a Ga, depending upon the context or the Raga. More on this context a little bit later. So that is the end of the first part of the four-part gentle intro to Carnatic music by Ramesh Mahadevan. It was read to you by Shiv Kumar Kalyan Raman. And thanks to Harihar for doing the keyboards, for illustrating the Western music aspects.